What's up, WonderPodOnline.com crew? It's Audio Master G signing in. And today I have a very special guest, someone who I've talked to about video games, but never about professional wrestling or sports entertainment with in podcast form. I bring you the Patman.
What is going on, people? Happy WrestleMania weekend to you all. We're going to be talking wrestling, sports entertainment. Well, I guess we're going to be more wrestling if you think about it. We're going to be focusing on Stampede Wrestling here for this podcast.
Yeehaw!
That's right. That's my best impersonation of the Stampede Wrestling song.
And it was quite good, actually. You know, expect the number one chart-topping Patman rendition.
Exactly. The da-da-da version is always good. People can hum along.
And to the listeners out there who may not be aware, both the Patman and myself, we grew up in Calgary, home of Stampede Wrestling. And for us, it was, you know, it's just a normal part of being a kid. A lot of people would say that WWF kind of stole the limelight for a lot of the territories, and that might be true, but I can assure you, growing up in Calgary, there was certainly a lot of conversations going on about what happened in the local promotion, just as much about what was going on out in the East.
Definitely, growing up in Calgary, as a kid, I was a big wrestling fan in general. I think the whole with the internet and everything and getting older, I sort of kind of went away from the wrestling and the escapism of it and everything. But at the time when I was a kid, you know, Saturdays, you got your Stampede Wrestling. And after that, you had your WWE or WWF Superstars. And, you know, the one where they used to always have the main star go against a jobber. I don't know. I still used to watch it all the time and love it. But definitely Stampede Wrestling back in the day. I mean, if you were anywhere in the promotion where they televised it, I mean, it was televised all over the world. There were places in the Middle East where, for whatever reason, politics or whatever, they did not allow WWF programming, but Stampede Wrestling was there. So it was actually quite a popular promotion, and considering the size of it, like, it wasn't a big promotion, gee, definitely, right? I mean, there wasn't a huge talent roster, but look at the people who came out of such a small promotion. I mean, as a kid, it was amazing, and I'm sure you'll comment on it too, but watching all these guys, budding stars who would become very shortly huge superstars in the WWE, like guys like Owen Hart, Bret Hart, Davey Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid, who became the British Bulldogs, and Davey Boy Smith then went on for a great singles career. Bad News Allen becoming Bad News Brown. Honky Tonk Wayne, or the Honky Tonk Man. I mean, so many growing up, we were kind of lucky, and so were all the other people who watched it around the world. We got to see these stars rising, really, didn't we, G?
You just scratched the surface. I mean, there's guys like Jake Roberts who appeared, Don Morocco, Rick Martel, you know, just to say a few other big names of the era, you know. And you know, if you look through the history of even before we were watching, there were some pretty notable names that walked through, you know, Stampede's entry ramp there and did bouts from, like, Abdullah the Butcher and Andre the Giant. I was actually quite surprised. I had no clue Andre was on that program at some point. I guess he was. Killer Kowalski actually made an appearance as well, at least at some point. Harley Race was there at some point. I mean, it's pretty incredible, you know, that the old territory system, I realized people were bouncing around. And that probably would explain a lot of these appearances. But if you consider that the clout that Stampede Wrestling had amongst all of the so-called big leagues later. Now, one of the things I also want to note, we mentioned that, you know, there was a lot of these guys we weren't around to see. And a big part of the reason of that was that the original creation of Stampede Wrestling did fold in 1989. We would have been approximately 12 or 13 years old at this time. So, you know, our memories are certainly based on the childhood memories, much like what would be if we were talking about the G.I. Joe or the Transformers or any of the other things that we would watch after school or on the weekend. I'm sure, some people probably remember the rock and roll wrestling cartoon, but there's much a case to be made for all wrestling at that era being more or less like a cartoon show. So, on that note, I think one of the things we should talk about, being able to walk around Calgary in our day-to-day lives, literally just running into these larger-than-life superstars in various places.
I'll go with the more famous guys because some of them less famous guys people may not have even heard of. Some of the ones that never made it out of Stampede Wrestling. But one time I was heading, there's a big shopping center in the south called South Center Mall. And I literally, and yes, I live to talk about it, bumped into Davey Boy Smith. He was looking the other way, heading in towards the Sears entrance. Basically, what he was doing at the time was this was when he was. After his first stint in the WWF, I guess I can call it that without getting sued. They can't, but I can. But in the WWF, as with the British Bulldogs, and they had some awesome matches and great WrestleMania moments, which we'll get into later on in the show. But he then came back with Dynamite Kid to Stampede Wrestling, kind of. I guess their contracts expired and they were back in the promotion. And this, there was the breakup of the Bulldogs. And he started going out on his own, and he started locally selling this really, I hate to say it, tacky-looking exercise outfit stuff and bulldog wear, I think he called it. But anyways, he was promoting this. I didn't know he was in the mall. I was heading out towards the mall. He was coming in towards Sears, and he bumped into me. Luckily, he just barely touched me, or else I may not be here as a kid to talk about it. But yeah, literally bumped into the British Bulldog. I don't recommend doing that unless you're also a very large wrestler. Very nice guy. He apologized. His thumbs up that he does sometimes when he's on the top ropes thing. He did that to me, and it was kind of interesting. So I literally bumped into a Bulldog, Bret Hart. This was when I was actually working, this was basically his WCW days. Should I still talk about it, or should I?
Oh,
Or should we leave it?
sure. I got a couple that,
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Recent ones? Yeah. Okay, so when I was at university, I paid my way through school by working at Safeway. Most people know where that is, a grocery store. One thing about Safeway was they were always asking people from other stores if you could go work at a different store if they were down. I usually said no. For some reason, they conned me into going to the West Hills Safeway. And here I am working around. I'm a produce guy, so I'm in the vegetable aisle, whatever. There's a bit of people talking, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, Bret the Hitman Hart. This was during his WCW days. okay, and the backstory here is Safeway and all the grocery stores pulled dog food because it was being made in China and there was something in it that was actually poisonous. So any dog food made in China got pulled off the shelves everywhere. And apparently, about 80% of the dog food at the time was made in China. So Bret Hart comes in looking for dog food, right? And we don't have any, they're off the shelves. And he just starts freaking out. Like, I don't know if he had more things on his mind than dog food, but it wasn't the Bret the Hitman Hart cartoon character hero. It was Bret the Hitman Hart, I'm pissed off that you don't have dog food character. And I thought he was going to put one of the poor grocery clerks into the sharpshooter because he didn't have any damn dog food. But near the end of this, I only came in near the end of this exchange. By the time people were telling me what was going on, Bret Hart's pissed off at the dog food aisle. So I go in there, and everybody snatched whatever they could, right? Because they didn't know how long the dog food shortage would be. But as he was leaving, he was like yelling, "What am I gonna feed my fucking dog?" And I was like, "Well, dude, you're especially during the WCW times. You're a friggin' multimillionaire." I didn't say this to him because I didn't want him to beat me up. But, why don't you go to the meat department and buy T-bone steak for your damn dog? So it was a very upset Bret Hart there. There were two of my biggest physical sightings of, I talked about Bad News Brown / Bad News Allen. I saw him. I forget where it was. I think it was actually at the Stampede in the Stampede grounds, the Calgary Stampede there. I also saw another year. I don't think did Lance Storm wrestle in Stampede or not? I don't think he did he?
I don't believe he had any matches in the promotion. Although, like we know he was trained in the dungeon and whatnot.
So but he might have. Yeah.
He might have.
I saw Lance Storm at the Stampede also. He's bigger than he looks. I guess when you compare him to some of the other wrestlers, he doesn't look that big. But when you see him up close, an average guy, he's a bigger guy than you think. So those are pretty much – I mean, there were other sightings too as a kid where, you know, you just – a quick sighting. Was that him? Was that him? And you get all excited. But those are probably my best stories that I can think of right now of Stampede wrestlers that you literally living in Calgary that you bump into.
He was, you know, the Bret Hart thing. I think the dog he was referring to was the first guy you literally bumped into, and the British Bulldog went hungry that night.
Yeah, what am I going to feed the Bulldog?
And on the same topic as the Bulldog, this wasn't actually a personal sighting, but I have a fellow coworker who's an old mark from the days of Stampede Wrestling, and once in a while we chat about it. And he had actually immigrated over from England as in his late teens, and he had actually watched the Bulldog wrestling out there, and he mentioned a story once to me that, you know, he's turning on the TV one morning, and you know, would have been Saturday, I'd imagine, and you know, checking out the Stampede promotion, and he's like, "Hey, I remember this guy from watching TV in England, and oh my lord, he's huge now." A little inflated. Now, I never actually ran into the Bulldog myself. I did have one quick sort of run-in with Bad News Brown or Bad News Allen, and believe it or not, it was at a CIBC bank machine. And he was on his way out at the door, and I was on my way in, and I didn't do the double take and realized, hey, that's Bad cool. News Brown. What the hell?
To embarrass me. Now he showed you that bogus clip. He didn't show you exactly what happened, did he? When I left the ring, I had to go on a little errand because I was double parked, you understand? I was double parked. That's right. They told me, they said, hey, bad news. You may get a ticket. Go move your car. Then they didn't show you what happened when I came back today.
That was definitely one of the most quick run-ins I had. I had a few more. I think one thing that maybe some people know about, but not a lot, about the Harts is that the matriarch of the family was very adamant about her sons having careers to fall back on. And as a result of that, almost all of the Hart brothers are actually trained as educators and teachers. I had at least Keith and Bruce Hart on a number of occasions as physical education substitute teachers, to be honest with you. You ever have any of the Harts of subs there, Pat?
I never did. I was never lucky enough. I remember our phys ed coach was teasing it, saying that he was going to get one of the – because he was also the wrestling coach, and he was teasing that he was going to get one of the Hart guys in here to give us some tips on wrestling. But, of course, it never happened. It was just a big tease.
Oh, not cool. No, they definitely frequented my elementary school, the ones I remember the most. I don't recall after elementary if I ever had either of them in. One thing I can tell you, though, is always interesting when you got them, because most teachers, you know, generally would be wearing their, you know, prim and proper outfits and their ties and their jackets and whatnot. Not the Harts, no. No, it was... It wasn't ring gear per se. However, they would wear their ring boots when they taught. And it was an instant giveaway for anybody who watched wrestling if they were unsure immediately that they would see the boots. And it was usually the ones you would see on television on Saturday. So, you know, you knew it was a genuine Hart teaching us. And I don't have any negative memories of them actually as subs. You know, sometimes you get those grouchy ones, or you'd get those inept ones teaching something out of their subject area. But with those guys, it always kind of had an aura of almost a surreal pleasantness, you know, especially being a wrestling fan and a mark as a kid. You know, not only do you have the comfort of having someone who does have a physical, you know, sports background, so capable of actually teaching gym or for Zed, you know, it was, wow, you know, this is a Hart brother. And you tell all your friends at recess, it's like, oh, wait till you have gym today. It's going to rule. You know, he's going to pile drive you. It's going to be awesome. Well,
that is cool.
Oh, I definitely have to say that was one of the neat experiences of being a kid in Calgary. At least my experience, I was lucky enough to have both those gentlemen at some point. Now, I also did have a run-in with a wrestler as a kid who unfortunately went crazy and murdered his family. And I think anyone who's been following professional wrestling out there probably can figure out I'm talking about Chris Benoit. Now, when I was approximately 12 or 11 or so, Chris Benoit came down from Edmonton to train with the Hearts. And before he actually got a chance to show up at the dungeon, and eventually he would move in the Hart family home and stay there, he stayed with my best friend and cousin. So he's basically staying with his, you know, the uncle and aunt side of the family. And we had the opportunity to meet him. We used to hang out at this kid's house on the weekends, and he body slammed me into the couch a couple times, and I remembered that quite fondly. I thought it was really cool, you know. I mean, while he was just a rookie starting out and hadn't made a name for himself or gone to Japan or anything like that, it was just this, you know, sheer awe. This is a wrestler. This is a real life wrestler, you know, and I'm getting body slammed by a real life wrestler. And that experience actually did stay with me for a long time. And we used to ask my friend, you know, on a regular basis, you know, how's Chris doing? Where's he at? And we kind of lived a little bit vicariously through the stories that our buddy would tell us about, oh, he's overseas right now wrestling in Japan. And, oh, he's, you know, signed a contract with the WCW, which wasn't broadcast in Calgary, at least with my cable package. So I didn't get to watch him until later with footage and whatnot. And then, of course, when we popped up in the WWF, it was like, wow, you know, I was able to kind of follow this guy's career, you know, without ever really seeing him do a lot of things in the ring until later. But that was probably my most notable run-in, at least, like, having the opportunity to, like, talk with somebody and then hang out with them. Of course, it obviously made it even worse when he killed his family and the whole craziness thing. Because, you know, you kind of look back at it and you're like, oh, crap, you know, another person from my street that I've met that's famous has killed a person. And I say another because the other one's a hockey player, but we're not talking about hockey today. We're talking about wrestling.
That is awkward, isn't it?
Just a little bit. I got one last one I'll touch on. It's kind of more of an interesting, I guess, coincidence. It wasn't me again in this case. It was actually my older brother who's also longtime wrestling fan. There's a pub in Calgary called Dixon's, and they had an open mic night for many years. And interestingly enough, for those people who are quite familiar with Chris Jericho, realize that he's also a musician and not just a professional wrestler, and he talks a lot about wanting to do both as a career. I guess he used to be a regular at open mic night, and my brother mentioned that when he started watching Jericho and wrestling, he realized we had to put two and two together. This was a guy he'd watch, you know, sing covers and whatnot at Dixon's for months on end. So, you know, it seemed like everywhere you go, somebody would have a story about knowing somebody or seeing one of these famous guys, or like you mentioned, some of the not so famous guys, but we knew who they were because we watched the show.
We're going to take a time out right now. After that, we'll be back with action right here on Pro Wrestling.
One of the things that actually sets the Stampede promotion apart was not necessarily that it was a local promotion or even in some cases the, you know, some of the individuals that came out of it, but more so the style of wrestling that was developed in the promotion. Later on, you start to see the high-flying lucha libre and mat-based technician styles of European wrestling, as well as the semi-worked, semi-shoot wrestling style of Japan that is notorious historically there. However, the first promotion in North America to really look at these different styles and bring them in is generally credited as being Stampede Wrestling. Now, whether or not it was a result of networking or the guys moving between promotions overseas and bringing friends over, you know, it was probably be a case-by-case basis. However, What's significant and notable is that a lot of people would say that Stampede Wrestling was, in fact, at least 10 to 20 years ahead of its time. Because of this, we would start to see a lot of these styles come out in the WCW, in the WWE, or F, depending on the era you talk about, and very notably the ECW, where a number of Stampede alumni also cut their teeth. Now, I think while we were much younger and maybe didn't have the realization of the significance of these movesets, there always seemed to be an aspect of Stampede that was just a little bit more exciting and a little bit more action-packed than, as you noted, Pat, with the Superstar show coming on later and having the Superstar squash the jobber in every single match, almost every single week. I guess my question for you, Pat, is do you think, you might have been picking up on that and that perhaps might have been a big part of the draw to the Stampede Wrestling show?
I think it was one of the things, definitely, that, the whole being local and bumping into people, like you said. And I think that is actually something different, too, because you mentioned, look at some of the old videos. I encourage people to look at them on YouTube. There's not a huge amount, but there is some stuff where the style is definitely more of the Japanese style. Yes, they brought in Japanese and Mexican wrestlers. Even the European ones were, you look at guys like the Dynamite Kid, who you talked about, Chris Benoit, pretty much modeled a lot of his stuff, at least originally, on the Dynamite Kid's, even his physique and stuff before he got really big, was very similar to. So I think Stampede Wrestling experimented more. I think Stampede Wrestling brought in a lot of people who brought their wrestling to the show. And it just went from there. I think maybe Stu allowed it. I think maybe Stu Hart let the people that come in show what they could do and make it different. You talk about WCW. At one point, WCW was really almost showing off. Eric Bischoff, look what we got. We got all these cruiserweights, and they're really high-flying, and they're really fast, and they're going off the top ropes and all of that stuff. And he was saying this is something that WWF or E at the time didn't really have. Well, I was kind of sitting back going, yeah, but Stampede had it 10 years ago, buddy. So I think in a way it was ahead of its time that way. So, a lot of people should give Stu Hart some more credit for that.
Yeah, I definitely know I didn't appreciate some of the technical aspects of it at the age, but there definitely was more to their show every week. And I think that would have had to have been part of it. They didn't have a lot of squash matches. It was usually a good at least 5 to 10 minute bout for most matches. Occasionally, you'd have a main event that would go longer. Working in the limitations of television, they would have had to make edits later and things like that.
This bout is one heck of a ring ding dong dandy.
One other thing that Stampede Wrestling had on the broadcast side of things that was very notable was the play-by-play announcer, Ed Whalen. Now, some people who might be familiar with Stampede Wrestling, but not necessarily from Calgary, might not be aware that Ed Whalen was not just a wrestling announcer. He was a huge part of a channel known as Calgary 2 and 7, eventually would be bought out and taken over by media conglomerate Global Television. But for a very long time, 2 and 7 was pretty much the biggest independent television station in Western Canada. They had a variety of shows, including a deal with the Calgary Flames, where Ed Whalen was also an announcer. And I think a big part of the reason he was so effective on the television show was he was a diverse media guy. He wasn't limited to interest in just one thing, but he also was clearly a fan of professional wrestling, so he didn't come in and become like a Mike Adamley type. He was definitely very capable at his job. I don't know if Pat remembers, I don't remember the exact date or time when we publicly quit on air I do remember that event happening and being pretty let down at the time. But I think we should probably talk about, you know, the significance of Ed Whalen and, you know, to put it frankly, why he was fucking awesome.
Ed Whalen's pretty interesting character. Like, he's a down-to-earth guy, which was a bit different in a lot of wrestling. I mean, look at, he wasn't a artificial character, you know. He wasn't the senator.
Oh, Jesse the Body.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he wasn't an artificial created character. He wasn't created by Stampede Wrestling as, okay, we need an announcer, play this role. He was, like you said, he did so many other things. Ed Whalen was the voice of Calgary Flames, more or less, when it first started out, when they didn't have huge media deals. Ed Whalen was also the anchor sportscaster for that channel for decades. So, I mean, he did every type of sports. He did the hockey. He came in as Ed Whalen, the sportscaster. Ed Whalen, the voice of the Calgary Flames, came later. You know, he was who he was, and it was genuine. He was a fan of the sport, and he knew, and he had fun doing it. Like, if you look at some of the old videos back on YouTube or wherever, he's having a good time. He's laughing half the time at the guys, and he played really well with the heels. They loved making fun of him, and, you know, he just had something that was kind of interesting. He wasn't artificial. He wasn't, it wasn't like they had, and I liked Jesse the Body. I loved Macho Man being a announcer for a long time, and the King Jerry Lawler and whoever, Vince McMahon. Everybody was a character talking about the show, whereas Ed Whalen was Ed Whalen, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, made him so good.
He brought a credibility with him that I you can't really buy. I mean, you could go out and you could spend multiple millions of dollars and sign, you know, a notable sports journalist or newscaster or reporter or whatever, you know, and get him to come in. But if you have a guy who's, you know, sincerely enjoys doing it and wants to do it, who also brings that credibility with him, I mean, how better to suspend disbelief? You know, I mean, this was the era of kayfabe, of course, and, you know, that element of believability by having someone with, you know, his credentials in there, it's something like you say, like he wasn't a character, and it brought with it just that extra magic touch.
Definitely. I remember one segment where Mukham Singh, for those of you who don't know that, maybe you know him, is he was in WCW, and he even was in WWE as a ridiculous character called Bastion Booger, which pretty much destroyed his career. But anyways, I remember a segment so well as a kid because it was so funny. They always played off each other. You could see videos of it. And he always hated it. He always hated Ed Whalen, and he was always threatening that he was going to do something to him. And Ed Whalen was – he'd always kind of fight back with this guy, and they were back and forward. And I remember one segment where – I mean, I'm sure, you know, afterwards they had a beer together, but Ed Whalen played it so realistically and so well that they accidentally got in a bit of a scuffle, right? And Mukham Singh, huge fat dude, broke Ed Whalen's glasses. I don't know if you remember that episode, but Ed Whalen starts freaking out and he starts hitting him with the mic. And then for the rest of the show, he purposely put his glasses on broken sideways, like just for dramatic effect that this guy was – he broke his glasses. And then he went on for weeks and weeks saying, you know, if you touch me, I have – and he had a piece of paper, I will sue you. And it just went on, and it was great stuff. Like, it's just some of the things you remember about Ed Whalen, and hey, he was great.
We've talked a little bit about some of the names we've seen on the roster. We've certainly not even come close to talking about all of them. Now – Pat, I recall one of your favorite guys from back in the day was a grappler by the name of Jason the Terrible.
Jason, my pet, no mercy! No mercy!
Jason the Terrible is one of these guys. I mean, you talk about Stampede Wrestling, and everybody who knows anything knows about the Hart family and knows about all the names we've said. People who have been there, like, Even I believe Ric Flair made a quick appearance at one point early in his career. And of course, all the Bulldogs and Owen and everyone. And but there were also wrestlers that didn't, for whatever reason, didn't leave the territory. And Jason the Terrible is one of these guys who was, I think he went to other territories, but he never made it big for a couple reasons I'll get into. And first of all, who is Jason the Terrible? Well, he's exactly who you think he is. He was a big 6'7" dude dressed like the movie character Jason, and he had a hockey mask. I love that character so much because in a way he was somewhat like the Undertaker in many matches, and it's kind of like the movie character too. People would just brutalize him. Two or three people would come in and kick the crap out of him, then hit him with chairs, and what would happen? He's Jason the Terrible. He would get back up, and he always did his "arr" scream, and he never talked, and it was awesome. And of course he started off as a heel. I mean, he's Jason, the character, is obviously a bad guy. He ended up having a manager slash tag team partner called the Zodiac. I didn't like the Zodiac as much, but he was okay. The cool thing about Jason the Terrible was, aside from being practically indestructible, was that he turned face. And when he turned into a good guy, people started bringing in Jason masks into the audience. And you could see on the TV show all these little kids with these Jason the Terrible masks suddenly idolizing this psychopathic character who was unbeatable and who went into rages. I thought it was really funny. I believe at one point he even became the Stampede champion because his popularity just rose and rose. And I think the management of Stampede Wrestling and Stu noticed this. You know, he was almost one of the first anti-heroes where he was a bad guy, he was a badass, but everybody liked him. And what did they do? They turned him face, and suddenly he became super popular. So Jason the Terrible, not very well known. Unfortunately, he got into a car accident later on, and that ended his career. I think he mustn't have had the Jason mask on to make him indestructible at the time. But the man behind Jason the Terrible now lives somewhere in British Columbia, and he's unable to – well, now he's old, but at the time his career was ended, but absolutely loved the character of Jason the Terrible. He was pretty cool.
Good point with the anti-hero aspect of it. He was, I guess, going back to the idea of being ahead of the time. I mean, it's hard to envision someone who models his whole image and character around a serial killer can get over as a face. But as you pointed out, people were drawn to it. They started bringing the mask to the show, and eventually the fans turned him, more or less what it was. And you know what I think would – what would Jason say about that? What do you think, Pat? Yeah, my sentiments exactly. Now, there are a few other guys, you know, that we probably should touch base on. I mean, we all had our personal favorites in the promotion. Somebody that I didn't really notice, didn't really start to stand out to me, of course, until it was later and eventually near the end of his life, which ended tragically, was Brian Pillman.
Well, here we are with Brian Pillman, Bruce Hart, and Keith Hart. Bad Company, are you ready? Are you ready for the big title bout on the card?
You better believe it. Like I said earlier, you can't keep a good man down. Bruce is ready. Unfortunately, Garfield Ports is not going to be ready, Jim. He's been stricken with a serious illness, and although I do have an intense competitive hatred for the man inside the ring, I want to wish him all the best and hope for a quick recovery.
A lot of people kind of forget that he was working his butt off in the Stampede promotion while he was being trained in the dungeon. I remember the name, I remember matches when I was watching, and he never really had that one breakout moment, I felt, but he always seemed to have, you know, what we call the good work rate. And I think he was one of the reasons I regularly tuned in before the actual promotion folded.
It's interesting. All I remember is he had this voice that it sounded like he had a sounded like he had a cold all the time, wasn't that? But it wasn't until he sort of went out, didn't he go to WCW and he became pretty big there for a while, or NWA or whatever it was called at the time, and he was quite good. I believe he was actually a CFL football player who was injured somehow, and then that's how he was came into Stampede Wrestling, a physical guy, and he just did something. You know, someone must have told him, try wrestling. and it worked out quite well for him. He's one of those guys that made it pretty darn big, but sometimes gets forgotten about in Stampede Wrestling. So you have a point there when you said that.
Yeah, he was, you know, what just like he's noted, is one of these guys who came out of the football background, didn't really, you know, work out for him due to injury. And I guess, you know, who you know is who you know, and someone sent him down to Calgary, and hey, you want to go get trained by these guys. And, you know, definitely one of the, I would say, most significant attitude or pre-attitude era guys to come out of the dungeon. You know, sometimes overshadowed by his later work with the, you know, Stone Cold and having the gun angle and, you know, and a lot of the craziness that was going on. But he was one hell of a technical wrestler, and I think they gave him lots of opportunity to showcase his skills. You know, and he was only in Stampede for about 3 years before it folded and he moved on. And you're right, he went to originally went to the NWA before going to the ECW and more or less solidifying, you know, his kind of persona, you know, through the next three federations there.
Tonight, the WWE proudly honors the finest in the history of sports entertainment. The legends that have blazed a trail.
You know, we're getting closer to Mania's Hall of Fame inductions, and some of these guys, you know, either will eventually go in or should be in. Like, a notable one that is in is a guy like Harley Race. Certainly one of the most significant wrestling minds around. But one of the guys we noticed when I was scrolling down, and Harley Race grabbed my eye, and then I looked two names down in this list, and it was like, Jake Roberts was in Stampede Wrestling. Now, I don't think the Roberts was ever going to the Hall of Fame, unfortunately, because of personal lifestyle, perhaps, you know, a couple years ago at that match where he pulled his pants down in the ring and told the fans to check out his snake. However, and that happened. You look it up, folks. there might be a video out there, but I don't advise it if you don't want to see full frontal nudity. I'm imagining it's probably in it. When we were looking at the list, though, were there any other names of guys in there that we might have not got the opportunity to see, or maybe we did see that, you know, just kind of made you go, huh, really?
There's definitely guys like Dr. D, David Schultz, you remember that guy? And I remember he came in once, I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame, but he came in and he did a big spiel on drugs one time, and even as a kid I thought it was lame. And like, okay, just wrestle, I get it, don't do drugs, you know? Junkyard Dog, for one. I only recently, this was by guess, a very early young Junkyard Dog, because I don't remember him in Stampede Wrestling. I was probably too young, or this was before he made a name for himself, and I didn't make the association with, wait a minute, that Junkyard Dog used to be a Stampede Wrestling guy. So a few, definitely a few like that. And then, of course, there's, you know, the entire Hart family, who more or less at one point should or would be inducted into some form of Hall of Fame, definitely.
Well, speaking of the Hall of Fame and guys that passed in and out, one person that hasn't been officially announced for the Hall of Fame at the time of this recording, but leaked that he would be going into the Hall of Fame this year, is Abdullah the Butcher. Now, he apparently leaked on another podcast called Right After Wrestling that is on Sirius in an interview that he has been contacted and will be going in, which, I mean, for some people, they probably heard the name, but they're likely thinking, well, I've never seen this guy in the WWE, and they'd be right, which is really, I find really interesting, because this year is the first year that we really have two guys going in. Abdullah being one, and Bullet Bob Armstrong being the other, really had no connection to Vince in any way. And in some ways, it's a testament to the fact that the WWE at least is starting to recognize people who were innovators and contributors to professional wrestling, regardless of their own business interests and model.
Quite interesting. I don't know. Maybe he's getting soft in his old age. I mean, we all know how he ignored WCW for years, and then, you know, where that got him. It got him at the losing end of ratings for a few years there. And it seems like maybe it's his ego. I don't know what it is, but Mr. Vince McMahon definitely thought his product was the best product out there. And like I said, would ignore other ones. I think it's great that other wrestlers who didn't make it, didn't make the jump, or for whatever reason are getting recognized. I hope that this is a sign of things to come. It might be quite difficult, but there are so many other wrestling things. Imagine the Japanese wrestling and luchador wrestling. Like, if somehow some of these legends can get into the Hall of Fame by the WWE in the future, would be great. I hope it's opening the doors for things like that.
Well, I guess time will tell. It's 1 year, 1 year in of having at least two go in this year. Maybe we'll see some of the legends out of, you know, Mexico and Japan. And I mean, if Coco Beware can go into the Hall of Fame, you know, and we all know that, yeah, we were entertained by him, and he wasn't the same caliber as some of the guys that aren't in there for, you know, various reasons. Like San Martino, obviously, you know, well-documented negative association with McMahon, even though we all know he should have been, like, the first year inductee. I'm pretty happy that Abdullah's going in. We were talking a little bit before this on the podcast, and we were trying to remember, you know, had we actually seen him in Stampede's Kids or not, or maybe it was like Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines that, you know, that period is kind of a blur being so long ago.
Definitely. At the time, especially even now, I'm not a huge blood guy. I don't like the bloodbaths. What's his name? Abyss doing it in TNA and stuff like that. So imagine back as a little kid, I think I really didn't like the bloodbaths, but I appreciate what he did. I mean, he was one of the pioneering, really hardcore guys, right? I mean, he went all over the world. He did some segments with Sting even and with Cactus Jack and whatever. So he's definitely, if not one of the first, one of the best known hardcore guys. And don't remember seeing him in Stampede, but it was a long time ago. And maybe I was just so grossed out when I saw him covered in his own blood that I just kept it out of my mind.
Traumatized. No doubt.
Yep. So if he goes to the Hall of Fame this year, he should show up in this beautiful white tuxedo, and then by the end of the Hall of Fame, have it covered in blood and have his face covered in blood, just to be, just for old time's sake.
I hope whoever inducts him, he attacks with a fork. But
yeah, he has to.
Wouldn't be the same.
I hope whoever inducts him knows that they're going to be attacked with a fork. That's the difference.
I'm not 100% sure, because until they officially make the announcement, apparently it's going to be Terry Funk.
Oh, cool.
And I think that's a pretty appropriate choice. We'll have to see what happens with his hopefully white suit at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
That'd be awesome.
Tonight in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, the paradox continues. Tonight, the prodigal sons return home the heroes, while five mighty superstars on a noble crusade become the villains. Tonight, the rogues are the beloved, the heroes the hated. Tonight, the gray clouds of disarray threaten to unleash a devastating tempest in your house.
We've got one more area of discussion we wanted to talk about, and this is kind of looking at the transition towards the WWE and the WCW era, and probably the most notable time and event we could talk about would have been the In Your House pay-per-view that did take place in Calgary. I believe it was July or August, a little fuzzy on that one. Interesting to note that this would have been a return of the alumni from Stampede Wrestling to Calgary, and might even look at it as a nod or kind of a send-off to Stampede Wrestling as we knew it. And we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the guys who did elevate themselves beyond the local territory level. What are your memories?
It's interesting you brought it up. I've almost forgot about it, but I don't remember. It took place in Calgary, of course, and it was quite interesting because WWF or WWE, big-name stars from Stampede Wrestling, of course, and with them were some of the Hart brothers who didn't, for whatever reason, they were a bit older, maybe they wanted to carry on the tradition in Calgary, they were teaching more, for whatever reason, not every Hart brother made it to the WWE. And this was a great way of how we were talking about, there were great wrestlers in Stampede Wrestling that didn't make it to the quote unquote big time. And then of course they're the super famous ones who did. And what they did in this main event was they kind of combined both of those aspects of Stampede Wrestling, which made it so good. And they put it in a big main event on WWE in Calgary. I didn't go to it, but I kind of wish I did, you know. I don't remember exactly all the opponents they were going against, but it was a big match at the time. Weren't the Road Warriors involved on the other side, or was that a different match? I can't.
No, you're right. The Legion of Doom, it was Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock, and Goldust were on the one team, and they were up against the Hart Foundation, and the members would have been Brett and Owen, the Anvil, the British Bulldog, and, of course, Brian Pillman. But that last match, the main event, ran for probably about, definitely over 20 minutes. I don't know if they actually got to the half an hour mark or not, but that was the big one. That was the draw.
Wasn't there one where the brothers joined in too? They wrestled in black. And like these were the ones like Keith Hart and Bruce Hart. And they actually wrestled in a WWF/E match with the other Hearts against some pretty big name WWF guys.
They certainly have brought back the family members in and out, you know, would make appearances at ringside and a variety of the programs until the fallout, of course. For a long period of time, we saw nobody, but lo and behold, last year at WrestleMania, what happened? Pretty much everyone is still alive and willing to show up related to the Hearts did
yep.
exactly that. Uh-huh. I just pulled up the IMBD, and it looks like, yes, there was some other Hearts credited in the list. Keith Hart is credited, Athena, you got Harry Smith,
wow.
Stu and Helen and Diana, Bruce. Oh, Ralph okay. Klein apparently is credited too.
Wow.
And for those out there listening, he was the premier of the province of Alberta.
And?
Famous for dropping out of school, I think, at grade 4 and becoming the leader of our province of Alberta. Testament to education in Calgary and Canada.
And you know his father was a professional wrestler, a masked wrestler. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, that would make a connection as to why he was there to do it. Yeah, I just thought about that. Yeah.
Never would have realized that. That's incredible. But we look at some of the other big pay-per-view matches, and there's been a lot of them. You know, the Hearts obviously were dominating, you know, the top spots. However, you know, I think of all the people that come out, the ones that I appreciate the most would have actually taken place near the end of the Attitude Era, after Brett had moved on, and after, unfortunately, Owen had died. And this would have been what they called at one point the SmackDown 6. And you had a couple guys constantly wrestling each other, and the programs between Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle with Chris Benoit, I think, were some of the most enjoyable matches I ever watched for alumni, and they were on many pay-per-views. We're talking a little bit about some of our favorite alumni and what they went on to do. And while I think, you know, Guerrero and Angle would have had good matches with each other, having a number of guys who could get involved in the mix made a huge difference. You have any thoughts about some other alumni that...
Definitely going to go way back to when I was quite a kid, and just obviously... Alumni, when you think of the alumni, you think Bret Hart, obviously, you know, how many great matches he had all over the world in multiple federations. You know, anything he's been in is a pretty much personal favorite WrestleMania moments, really. There's so many of them. But I've got two kind of ones from WrestleMania's past that I really liked involving Stampede Wrestling alumni. WrestleMania 3, I believe, the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, versus British Bulldogs. So, I mean, that was pretty awesome because all four members of this team, and it was a World Tag Team Championship match, all of them were Stampede Wrestling guys. These were all people who we watched as kids growing, literally. The British Bulldogs grew a lot. With needles, I think, but whatever. They, you know, it was four of the... my favorite guys from Stampede Wrestling, and there they are at WrestleMania, the biggest thing ever, and it's a title match. It was quite great. Unfortunately, that dumb bastard Danny Davis, wasn't that his name, interfered. The referee, I believe that was his name, was a long time ago, causing the Bulldogs to lose their title. But you know what? They lost it to another Stampede Wrestling alumni team, so there was a win-win situation if you were a Stampede fan. I think it was WrestleMania 4 also. There was a big Battle Royal. I think this was before Royal Rumble or any of those things. So as Battle Royals go, a WrestleMania one was huge. And the last two people standing in one of the biggest Battle Royals in WWF history at WrestleMania itself were both Stampede Wrestling alumni, Bad News Brown / Allen and Bret the Hitman Hart. They almost worked together if you've seen the match, if you remember as a kid. And that, as a Stampede Wrestling fan, you're thinking, you know, this is extra special because these guys are from Stampede and they're working together. And you think, you know, it's because they were from Stampede that they were doing it, right? And they ended up being the last two men in this massive battle royal. I believe, if I remember correctly, Bad News Brown betrayed Bret Hart. It was on his – he started to get a push there, and I think he got a title, some sort of Intercontinental title at some point later, Bad News Brown. He betrayed Bret Hart and ended up winning the Battle Royal, and if I'm not wrong, Bret Hart came in, he got a big, huge trophy, and that ended up being smashed over Bad News Brown's head. But those are two huge moments where, you know, you're proud to be a Stampede Wrestling fan because these guys have gone so far. You know, it's quite great alumni matches right there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the fact that they would have had this chemistry built from their years of wrestling each other before hitting the bigs, if you will, it just opened the door for them to have a great program. WrestleMania 10, for example, when Owen and Bret faced each other, they'd built Bret up to this level, and they always had Owen kind of in the wings and the jealous younger brother role, and possibly just as popular amongst the crowd. And even though he was kind of doing the heel thing, I think it was always this sort of, you know, the wink and the nod to the crowd with Owen during that program, that it was like, you know, we don't want to pull another Ultimate Warrior Hogan type of match where you don't know who to cheer for. We'll have me play the bad guy, but we all kind of knew Owen was hard to hate. He was just so good at what he did. And watching him go over his brother and, like, cleanly pinning him, at least in that tournament, I think that was a notable moment for me as a memory, like, just kind of watching that family go to the top and dominating it. Of course, later on in that night, Bret would actually have the title officially, even though he'd been cleanly lost to his brother that night. But it set up a long feud between the two in such a way that you knew that Owen could take him. That was a good one for me with alumni as well. But I do like the point you brought up with the tag team match. I'd forgotten about that, and you're right. That was almost like the debutante moment for, you know, Stampede alum to just kind of, you know, show off what they could do and truly enjoy center stage.
Oh, it was great. And that match you mentioned was great in the way that might have been one of the turning points in which everyone knew Owen was great. In some ways, Owen's high-flying ability was better than Bret's. He was more of a mat technician. And that was when, for me at least, and maybe a lot of fans out there, Owen Hart truly got out of the shadow of Bret. And he truly then started to move on. Didn't he become the King of Hearts later on, and his Slammy Awards? And he tagged up with the British Bulldog, another association between Stampede Wrestling. They became champions. I think that was really a turning point where a lot of people, we knew it, but a lot of people out there started to take notice that Owen wasn't just Bret's little brother. He was out of the shadow at that moment, really.
Yeah, not a nugget. Not a nugget at all. Okay, folks, well, we've talked a lot about Stampede Wrestling tonight, and I think both Pat and I are in agreement. It was a huge part of our childhood, and we've mentioned many of the reasons why. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Stampede Wrestling, totally encourage you to go out, find some videos. You can go online. They're all over the place. Keyword searches. Check out some of the older work, especially by some of the guys that you might have, you know, come to love on WWE or WCW or ECW or any other federation. And on the same token, we hope you have a happy WrestleMania weekend. If you catch the pay-per-view, Feel free to post comments on any of our articles about it or in this podcast comment section. We also have some other special articles coming out this week. So depending on when you get to this, make sure you check the WonderPodOnline.com website for some other extra special wrestling content. Audio Master G is signing off.
Have a great WrestleMania weekend. And in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Stampede Wrestling. Bye-bye now.
That in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Stampede Wrestling.